Kick up the dust, claim the prize.
So comrades, come rally, in the last fight, let us face. The Internationale unites the human race. So comrades, come rally, in the last fight, let us face.
Now, Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash, occupies the airwaves with May Day programming. In New York, May Day, the day for the working class, for the 99%. We're going to speak to somebody I think is quite special. Time magazine named Ajahn Poo one of the 100 most influential people in the world. A creative organizer who knows how to create social change from the bottom up. Ajahn Poo has been growing into that role since she was a student, outraged by the stories of domestic workers, often immigrants or women of color who labored long hours for low pay as nannies, maids, housekeepers, cooks, elder caregivers, and other household workers. Women who have been treated as unskilled and expendable, yet who were responsible for raising children, caring for the ill and elderly, and facilitating the daily lives of millions of families.
Ajahn Poo's gift for creating worker-led groups has made the National Domestic Workers Alliance into an umbrella organization with 35 satellites across the country with more than 10,000 members. Ajahn Poo has done this by creating a new paradigm for how we value work, and with that, how workers can be built their powers collectively. Ajahn Poo goes beyond organizing to transforming.
Ajahn, you have co-founded the National Domestic Worker Alliance, which includes more than 20 organizations in 10 states across the country with more than 10,000 members. How have you managed to create a new paradigm for how we value work in America?
We have been building our organizations among domestic workers for the last 15 years or so. I think in many of the big cities where we live, like New York, about 15 years ago, workers started coming together and organizing. For most of the last 15 years, it's been very incremental building, worker by worker, meeting by meeting, slowly building campaigns, learning how to build membership, and then learning how to keep membership, and then grow that membership to scale. And I'd say about 5 or so years ago, we reached a critical mass where we recognized that around the country, there were these organizations growing and that we were on the brink of the potential or the possibility of building a national movement. So between organizing victory in New York with the passage of the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights and that being a real beacon for workers around the country and a signal that if we came together and we really organized, we could win. And then having the ability to come together for trainings and to share lessons and challenges and feel a part of something national and even international at this point, that's really given people a sense of the potential of organizing and building a movement. We are now actually at a point of having 35 affiliate organizations in 19 cities and 11 states around the country, so we're growing quickly. In fact, we have 2 new affiliates from Alabama who are going to be joining us in May. So we're a movement that's growing, and we're on the brink of another victory in California with the passage of the California Domestic Workers Bill of Rights, hopefully just right around the corner. It's an exciting time.
What kinds of benefits and what kinds of achievements have you had with regard to this strategy of Domestic Workers Bill of Rights and other forms of organizing, both in New York and around the country?
The campaigns for labor standards have allowed us to really lift up the stories and the voices and the experiences of domestic workers in the public consciousness. So in New York, there's definitely greater awareness within the domestic work industry about the importance of the work and about the need to protect it and recognize it. So there's more workers organized and organizations that are growing in a number of immigrant communities around the city. And a parallel process is happening in California where workers are starting to come together and then they're actually bringing their stories to bear in legislatures and establishing labor standards where they did not exist before. We're actually proving that through organizing, we can actually expand labor protections for workers in this country in this moment, even as there are so many attacks against workers happening.
How have you been able to organize domestic workers, nannies, housekeepers, cooks, elder caregivers, mostly women of color as a workforce, mostly immigrant workers as well, as a workforce to build their power collectively, a workforce that we know remains uncovered by labor law generally? How have you gone to Alabama and begun to capture the sentiment of that group of workers to organize for their own benefit?
Well, we really believe that wherever there's oppression and exploitation, there will be organizing and resistance. And we've seen that to be the case among domestic workers. I mean, despite the isolated working conditions, workers have a natural desire and instinct to come together and act collectively. In the early years, we were able to prove that organizing is powerful through working together on cases of abuse of domestic workers, individual workers who were exploited or abused by their employers, being able to work together and mounting a collective campaign for justice for those workers. And over time, what that led to was a recognition that the actual laws that are in place are not sufficient. So if we organize collectively to change the laws, we could actually elevate our standards and actually demand justice from a broader system that's excluded us from protections and recognition. So being able to evolve and also grow relationships among workers and build a sense of community, that's also yielded the formation of worker-owned cooperatives in a number of cities and formation of hiring halls in places like San Francisco, where the workers come together and they set standards together for wages and other working conditions. So the organizing takes lots of different shapes and forms, but the central idea is we know we're more powerful when we come together. We know we can do more together, and we've actually seen the impact of that.
Can you talk a bit more about the hiring halls and the worker co-ops? Because I think a lot of people know about the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights in New York State, and that's to some extent the strategy throughout the country. But that's something new as far as I could see. And also, what other kinds of new developments? Where do you go from here?
In Boston, for example, there's a Brazilian women's green cleaning cooperative called Vida Verde, which is a cooperative of about 20 women who are house cleaners. They make their own cleaning products out of organic and healthy supplies, and they are dispatched to work. They have agreed on the wages, and they have a system set up so that they can support each other and they can all earn a livable wage through that work. In San Francisco, an organization called La Colectiva, or the Women's Collective of the Day Labor Program at the La Raza Centro Legal in San Francisco, has set up a hiring hall where they've established their wages and the terms of employment that they've all agreed upon. Workers who are involved in the organizing essentially are added to a list of being able to receive jobs that come through the hiring hall. So the more active you are, the more jobs you'll be able to get. So that's another system that has been set up to support both the organizing and the jobs and improved standards for workers. You know, there's a lot of experimentation happening around the country, and we really try to support it as a national movement. We think that the work that, for example, Domestic Workers United is doing with nanny training programs, hundreds of workers have been trained in negotiation, in their rights, and in basic skills that will be useful to them on the job, and they graduate with certificates that allow them to bargain with their employers for improved wages and working conditions. These are all things that empower our workforce to be able to negotiate and to bargain. And it's not enough. We have to continue finding more strategies that really meet the challenges of this moment, as immigration laws are still preventing workers from having a real pathway to citizenship and legal status, as the climate for workers and corporations become more powerful. I mean, I think all of these things are contributing to a hostile environment for workers, and our strategies really need to be able to meet that moment and those challenges.
One of the things that's happening right now, which is encouraging in New York, is that from the community sector, activists, organizers are working with groups of marginalized workers, for example, in the car wash industry, in the greengrocer, manure, to begin to organize. There have been spectacular campaigns with groups like Justice Will Be Served trying to set up sweatshop-free zones in communities to encourage owners to comply with the demands of heretofore unorganized workers who are being sorely abused in the work that they do. How do you begin to build, perhaps not dissimilarly from them, organization at the grassroots level for a broad-based movement, a mass movement across community sectors, really in the interests of poor and working people? Perhaps what have we not been doing, and what perhaps organized labor may not have been doing to bring people into the organized fold to negotiate their labor power?
I mean, I think that's really the question of our time. I think we have actually an opportunity in this moment to build the kind of power and organization that we need. There is a feeling that the 99% is actually an identification that a lot of people and the millions of Americans really identify with. If that's the case, this is a moment for the 99% movement to really grow, for everyone who is suffering out there to feel like they can be a part of something. And our job is to figure out what that something is, you know, whether people are invited to join unions or join domestic workers movement or join even something called the 99% movement. As organizers, our responsibility to welcome anyone and everyone who feels like they want to stand up for justice and dignity and democracy, that they have a home. I think that groups like the National Domestic Workers Alliance, Jobs with Justice, I mean, that's what we've been trying to do and build, is those opportunities for people to come together.
Well, I mean, throughout history, there's been a feeling that certain groups of workers can't be organized. It used to be the industrial workers in the Midwest, and they were groups that just couldn't be organized until they were organized in the middle of the Depression. And now this whole campaign with your group and numerous other groups, and you've allied together with what you call the Congress of Excluded Workers. So if you could talk a little bit about who's in that and what kind of groups we're talking about and what the potential nationwide this time is for all of these different groups to get together and organize.
In 2010, at the second U.S. Social Forum in Detroit, the National Day Labor Organizing Network, Jobs with Justice, the Domestic Workers Alliance, and the Guest Workers Alliance, a number of organizations, Mississippi Worker Center, Black Workers for Justice, a number of organizations representing sectors of workers who've been excluded either by design in the labor laws or by default in terms of how actual organizing does or doesn't support the organizing that they're doing, and that we decided that we would come together and share our stories, share our challenges, and try to figure out the movement that we could build together as workers who have historically been excluded. And what we found was just powerful connections across the experiences of workers in these different sectors, restaurant work, taxi drivers, all of these workers who are seen as non-traditional. And the other thing that we recognized or realized when we got together was that increasingly the story of these so-called excluded or marginalized work sectors is increasingly the story of more and more working people in this country. And so domestic workers, when I first started organizing, people used to call it sort of a shadow workforce or a marginalized workforce. But the characteristics that define domestic work, lack of job security, lack of benefit, dangerous working conditions, low wages, long hours, I mean, these are conditions that that increasingly define more and more jobs in this country today. So it's not only important that excluded workers are coming together and organizing, but it's important that all workers are coming together and organizing. And I think that the Excluded Worker Congress is trying to elevate our stories as excluded workers, but we're also build a broader labor movement that actually really speaks to the conditions of 21st century work and the struggles of workers.
I just want to go internally and begin to look at how you promote the vision of leadership and the vision of working class within building the collective power of this group of workers to represent its own interests as a labor force, because I think that's something the issues of, we used to call it union democracy and so on, are something that we have to give much greater care and thought to.
Leadership development is one of the core principles and aspects of our movement building and our organizing strategy. We prioritize supporting the development of the leadership of workers, of domestic workers. One of the ways in which we're doing this, everything that we do has a dimension of really lifting up that leadership. But one particular intentional program we have is called the SOUL Leadership Program, which stands for Strategy, Organizing, and Leadership. What that program is a two-year program that works with a set of our leaders from 25 of our affiliate organizations to really support them in organizing, in developing their organizations, strengthening their organizations, leading from a place of dignity, of pride, of love, and of justice. That program has about 90 participants in it from around the country, and it's been very successful. In addition to that, we have an annual congresses. Every year there are national gatherings of workers. This year our national congress will be in Washington, and we're expecting 400 some domestic workers from around the country to come together, and that is a space of sharing, of learning, growing together, talking about the future of our movement. Where do we go from here? So those are just a few examples of what some of the pieces that we're doing.
Projecting the vision of working class, of women of color, this group of workers into the broader social justice movement. How similarly have you been able to accomplish that, given the biases within our society, or the fact that this group of workers and their work is so often erased from the consciousness of society as a whole?
Well, one example, I think, it's really through the work that it happens and through the organizing. And we have just launched a national campaign called Caring Across Generations. And it has the stories and leadership of domestic workers at the center of it. But really, it's a very broad coalition of unions like SEIU and AFSCME and the AFL-CIO, together with women's organizations, together with organizing groups like Center for Community Change and PICO, together with disability rights organizations and senior organizations like the National Council on Aging. And all of those organizations are working together to figure out how we create 2 million new quality jobs in home care, a path to citizenship for domestic workers and immigrant domestic workers and care workers who are going to be doing home care work in the future, and affordability mechanisms to support families to be able to afford care as this country starts aging at a rapid rate. And I think that having domestic workers leading economic and political agendas that really bring diverse interests together and really strengthen a collective voice across race, class, and generation has allowed us to really lift up the leadership of workers, of our members. And so I think it's through the work and through providing leadership for a broader social movement agenda and social justice agenda that things start to change. And that's what we're trying to do.
You so excite me. You truly do. I'm just so energized and happy that we really begin to have this kind of work happening. It's such a shining moment within a so bleak-looking picture for really organizing the working class. So really right on.
Some people say this is the future of labor, but this is the present. So thank you very much. I remember 5-6 years ago we were saying, we hope this is going to happen. Well, it's happened. It's time that people recognize it's happened, and we have to support all of these efforts, both yours, taxi workers, farm workers, all across the country, because if the labor movement is going to go anywhere, this is it.
Thank you for all of your support over the years and for giving voice to the edges of working class and worker organizing in New York and throughout the country. I think that's been really vital for us as we have organized through the years and grown. And I feel optimistic. I feel like we are going to be able to build not only a movement that lifts domestic workers, but for all American workers and workers around the world. I think that the time has come, and we're going to turn that corner, and we're going to see the movement we need emerge.
Ajahn Pooh, co-founder of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, thank you for joining us, and happy May Day.
Happy May Day.
What's going on? There's a war zone here today out in the heartland, but the union's here to stay. Those multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true, but they declared a war on us right now, and by God it's up to you, 'cause there's a war on.
And there's also a struggle of the workers, which we've been hearing all day with May Day programming. May Day, the day for the working class, for the 99%. And we're moving on.
Now, Trudy Goldberg with Jobs for All speaks to us from United May Day rally at Union Square. Trudy, happy May Day.
What's it looking like now at Union Square?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, even off the square, and you can hear the noise, including the helicopter, but it's just packed. It's a really very, very lively May Day with many, many related, important issues related to inequality. Very, very crowded there. And as I say, I'm a block or so off, and I think you probably hear the background noise.
So does that mean that it is really jam-packed? Packed at this
it's
point?
It's pretty jam-packed. There was some marching, and it's very, very crowded, I'm happy to say, and lots of people handing out lots of leaflets. We have a wonderful big banner that says Jobs for All and Trabajos para Todos, and our demand that we're handing out and hoping that we're getting as many people to endorse this demand. We found many like-minded people.
Trudy, you are with the organization Jobs for All, and there doesn't seem to be any end of the need for Jobs for All.
The National Jobs for All Coalition, which is working now with the Wall Street Demands Group in New York on this Jobs for All committee, we are just as concerned about the huge chronic unemployment, particularly for minorities at all times, hoping to take advantage of heightened interest in unemployment during this ongoing jobs crisis. I mean, we've got 25 million people at least who are either without a job altogether or part-time looking for more work, and then another 16 or 17 million who are underpaid, you know, aren't even making the measly four-person poverty standard. So I'd like to kind of let you know what our demand is. We're asking for people to endorse it. We demand a democratically controlled public works and public service program, dignified work at good union jobs for everyone who wants to work, and we do mean everyone, including immigrants and persons formerly incarcerated. We want to create, to begin with, about 25 million jobs. That would really put a dent in it. The new jobs are going to build the facilities and provide the services needed to meet the needs of the 99%, including in education, health care, housing, transportation, and clean energy. And we want to fund it by raising taxes on the banks, corporations, and the wealthiest 1%, and by ending all U.S. wars. We are looking for many, many endorsements, perhaps a nationwide petition campaign. We have plenty of information about unemployment if you go to our website, which is njfac.org. But if you want to know more about the committee or to endorse the demand, you can email at info@jobsforallny.org. I also want to say that we really think that this employment issue ought to be more on the front burner than it is. Some of you may have seen that study from Harvard of young people between 18 and 29, and guess what they're most concerned about? Trumps all other issues, including the deficit, including everything else you might want to think about social security. Job creation and reduction of unemployment. Young people are very, very concerned about this, and we really think the president ought to be targeting that as well as payments for college education.
Well, Trudy, we'd like to thank you for joining us. Final word on what this organization in total of May Day means to building a workers' movement to press for better working conditions, well, dealing with the stagnation of wages, and, of course, getting jobs for those who don't have it.
We're talking about jobs at good union wages. We're talking about workers' rights and immigration rights. We think it's Jobs for All movement could embrace so many of the issues of extreme inequality, including wages. You know, with a loose labor market, you've always going to have a downward push on wages. It's such a waste, that people are supposed to practice the work ethic. Well, how can you do it if you don't have a job?
Well, Trudy Goldberg, we'd like to thank you for joining us from the converging rallies at Union Square, which are soon going to be kicking off a march down Broadway to the Financial District. And we're going to hear a little bit from Bruce Springsteen. Thank you, Trudy.
Going to run back on the square if I can possibly get in.
Okay, we hope you can.
Happy May Day.
The revolution comes like thunder, and the age of hypocrisy is done.
Turn off their televised illusion. Stand up and look them in the eyes.
Declare your mental liberation. Shake off the dust and claim the prize.
So comrades, come rally. In the last fight, let us face the internationale.
You've been listening to Building Bridges Radio's coverage of May Day 2012 in New York City. Building Bridges produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash, and our website is www.buildingbridgesradio.org.
Something to prove.